Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The oath began in shambles when Chief Justice John Roberts and Barack Obama stared and stumbled before a throng that stretched as far as the eye could see. Then, on the west portico of the Capitol building, in clear, cold sunshine, they brought it home.
And will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
So help you God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Congratulations, Mr. President. President Barack Obama is off to the balls now. Soon, with much of Washington, the guns have boomed their salute. The crowd has mostly streamed off the mall, but a big inaugural speech and change of power still echo. This hour, On Point, a live wrap-up of President Barack Obama's Inauguration Day. You can join the conversation. What will you take away from this day, from President Obama's inaugural? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me tonight and all day today in the studio, On Point News analyst Jack Beattie, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Good to have you here, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
And from Washington, we're joined by Edna Greene Medford, historian at Howard University. Earlier today, she was among the, I guess, millions of people who gathered on the National Mall. Edna Greene Medford, welcome back to On Point. What did you see and feel there today, madam?
Oh, my. I saw and felt quite a bit. I don't know how many people were actually there. It's hard when you're in the middle of the crowd to really judge exactly how many there are.
They say maybe 2 million.
Still counting. I can believe it. It could easily be 2 million. And I got to the mall at 7 o'clock this morning. I left my home at 4. And I'm only 7 minutes from the metro station. It took over an hour just to get to the station and park the car.
And when the crowd was in full throat, when Obama was giving his address, when they were greeting him on the dais, on the west portico of the Capitol, what were you thinking?
Oh, it was electric. The crowd went wild. People were just so happy. Every time he was on the screen, on the Jumbotron, a roar went up from the crowd. It was when he was sworn in, I thought, gosh, this is really happening. You know, it's for a long time, even after he won the election, you know, it hadn't hit home to me that he really was going to be the president. And when he was sworn in and it happened, it was just so surreal to me.
He began right off the bat with my fellow, not Americans, but my fellow citizens. He went on very quickly to say, we gather because we have chosen hope over fear, and he laid out the litany of challenges unsparingly facing this country. Let's listen to just a little bit of that.
Our nation is at war against a far-reaching network of violence and hatred. Our economy is badly weakened, a consequence of greed and irresponsibility on the part of some, but also our collective failure to make hard choices and prepare the nation for a new age.
Our collective failure to make hard choices and prepare the nation for a new age. He went on later in the speech to say the country's capacity remains undiminished, but he was giving the country what for? Be ready. We're going to go.
Our capacity remains undiminished, but our time of standing pat, of protecting narrow interests and putting off unpleasant decisions, that time has surely passed. Starting today, we must pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off, and begin again the work of remaking America.
Jack Beattie, you were listening right throughout. Barack Obama said during his campaign, we're fired up and ready to go. He certainly came out of the gates strong today, very purposeful.
Yes, and the iron in our circumstances entered into his voice, into the vigor of it, the pace of it, the tone of anger. And the presiding spirit of this speech, really, and I think Professor Medford would agree, is Lincoln's address to Congress just before the Emancipation Proclamation. Compare the speech. Here's Lincoln. The dogmas of the quiet past are inadequate to the stormy present. The occasion is piled high with difficulty, and we must rise with the occasion. As our case is new, so we must think anew and act anew. Obama, we proclaim an end to the worn-out dogmas that for too long have strangled our politics. Obama, the stale political arguments that have consumed us so long no longer apply. And he identifies three of these arguments: the false argument between big government and small government. The only question is government effective for ordinary people? The idea that markets are either all good or all bad. The only question is, can markets be regulated to protect the common interest? And finally, and I think most eloquently, as for our common defense, he says, we reject as false the choice between our safety and our ideals. Those ideals, he said, still light the world, and we will not give them up for expedience's sake. That takes on precisely the security debate in the Bush administration, and it says that debate is over. We come down on the side of liberty.
We're going to go to a top reporter who's still on the National Mall tonight, who's been watching all today, day to day. The party goes on in Washington. And, of course, there was a scare today as Senator Ted Kennedy collapsed under the Capitol dome during the luncheon after the speech. Howard Fineman is senior Washington correspondent and columnist at Newsweek. He joins us now from the Mall. Howard, thank you very much for being there.
Well, you're very welcome. In the spirit of candor, I should say I'm inside now in a MSNBC trailer where there's some heat.
At last.
But I was outside on the Mall right under the podium when Barack Obama spoke. In addition to the eloquence that you were talking about, what was amazing to me was to turn around and look west from the podium area out toward the Lincoln Memorial, and to see that sea of 2 million people, many of them with small American flags they'd been given by the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, waving them. It was like a field of wildflowers of 2 million all the way from one end of the Mall to the other, a crowd unlike any that had ever been seen in Washington. And as Obama spoke and as they cheered, they waved the flags, and the field of flowers, if you will, was waving with him. And for him, it was an absolutely unforgettable scene, unlike anything Washington has ever seen.
Howard, I'm reading here from former deputy chief speechwriter for President Clinton, Jeff Schiesol, saying it was quite a severe speech, muscular, tough-minded, and unsparing, at times startlingly so. Maybe not the most inspirational speech, but surely the most purposeful. It was a display of strength, his, and a summoning of strength, ours. Would you agree, Howard?
I would agree with that. He was saying that we're in the same predicament that the American revolutionaries were in, who crowded in the boat with George Washington crossing the Delaware. I mean, he was talking about us being in a small boat with icy waters all around. So I think that analyst was correct. It was strong. It was focused. But yes, it was very serious. It was not a bunch of lilting language about the road rising to meet our future and so forth. This was about the hard work that we have to do as a people, but it's a hard work that's inspired by the truly wonderful notion of the progress we've made to get to this point. I thought it was severe, but it was severe in the way the founders could be severe as they dealt with the challenges that they faced 200 years ago. One of the things that strikes me about Obama, in addition to his knowledge of language, his care about language, is his real feel for American history. This is a guy who cares about American history and constantly hears echoes of our history wherever he goes on the campaign trail and now into the White House. And I think he'll summon those notes of our history. In this case, they were ones about the serious challenges that we face. I would also say on foreign policy, as severe as he was on domestic policy, his announcement of a new era in foreign policy for America was in a sense more uplifting, because at least that's easier to do, to change. It's easier for him to change that tone than it is for him to solve our economic problems.
And Howard, we have to ask you about Massachusetts Senator Ted Kennedy, who collapsed with a seizure during the luncheon immediately following the speech. The word this evening, I guess, is that he's okay, should be out of the hospital tomorrow, but a very scary moment, and people really didn't know where that was going for a while, Howard.
It was a scary moment, and after I was out watching the speech and surveying the scene, I hustled into the Capitol to be part of the press pool that was ushered into the balcony above Statuary Hall to watch Barack Obama and Michelle Obama and Joe Biden and Dr. Biden come in. So we saw the first few minutes, and then we were ushered out. Then word came just as dessert was being served at the luncheon that first Senator Robert Byrd had fallen ill, and he was taken out of there. And within a minute of that happening, people at Ted Kennedy's table noticed that he seemed to be having convulsions that might have indicated a seizure. And Ted, the senator, was in a wheelchair that was equipped so that the back could be put back to form a kind of hospital gurney. The Capitol medical staff was rushed into the scene, and I'm told from people who were there that everyone stood in silence of respect and concern and love for Ted Kennedy as the medical people administered to him and took him out of the statuary hall, which is an amazing place filled with oversized statues of the heroes of American life. And certainly for Democrats and in a way for Barack Obama, Ted Kennedy is that kind of almost mythic figure. But the good news is tonight that even though he did have the seizure, and that's pretty clear, which is a result of the brain cancer he's been fighting and the treatments he's been getting, he seems to be aware, he's talking to people, he's joking with people. He told Senator John Kerry that he's got his Irish up and he's looking forward to getting back to work. And I think Ted Kennedy will deal with this situation as long as he can, and I dare say if there's going to be a health care bill enacted by the Congress, Ted Kennedy will manage to be around to see it through.
Howard Fineman, please stand by in Washington. Edma Green Medford, who was on the Mall today, and Jack Beatty with me here. Aretha Franklin singing here today at the inauguration. Maybe the most stirring moment of the day in its way. Listeners, you can join us. Can you believe it? What did you think of the speech of the message to the nation and world of President Obama? 800-423-8255 is our number. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with a live wrap-up of President Barack Obama's Inauguration Day, a day that will live in American memory. You can hear the cheers right there along Pennsylvania Avenue as Barack and Michelle Obama exited their heavily armored limo and walked the last stretch toward the White House. You can join the conversation today. President Barack Obama, can you believe it? What did you think of the speech? What grabbed you? What moved you? What made you think? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Edna Green Medford is with us, professor of history at Howard University. She was on the National Mall today for the whole event. Jack Beatty's here. Howard Fineman is here, senior Washington correspondent and columnist at Newsweek, author of The 13 American Arguments. You can join us as well, 1-800-423-8255. We're honored right now to be joined as well by another gentleman who was on that mall today. Joining us is James Pride. He is one of the Tuskegee Airmen, the elite group of all black aviators and their support in World War II. 83 years old, on the National Mall today. Mr. Pride, thank you very much for joining us this evening. What did you make of what you saw today, sir?
Obama is a great person. He is, in fact, the kind of person who the country needs to lead it at the moment.
The Tuskegee Airmen fought for this country in World War II and were famously, infamously disrespected in the aftermath of that war when so much prejudice was still in effect in this country. What were your thoughts about the fact that an African-American was standing taking that oath today, James Pride?
It's been I've had a long life, and at the during my early years, I never expected to see an African-American president. In my early years, there were no African-American mayors or other senior governor elected officials. So we've come a very, very long way.
And what about Barack Obama's message today? Did it sound to you like the right message for this moment, for the country and the world now?
It sounded perfect for the work for the U.S. today. We need to do more about helping ourselves, which is, I think, a major part of his message.
It was tough in a way, a kind of tough love. Do you think the country still has what it takes to buckle down the way it buckled down and did the necessary with your help and others, in World War II.
Yes, I think it has the need to do that, and I think it will do that because of that need.
James Pride of the Tuskegee Airmen in Washington today for the inauguration of Barack Obama. Thank you very much, Mr. Pride, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Here's Barack Obama talking today about making government work for Americans.
The question we ask today is not whether our government is too big or too small, but whether it works, whether it helps families find jobs at a decent wage, care they can afford, a retirement that is dignified. Where the answer is yes, we intend to move forward. Where the answer is no, programs will end.
Howard Fineman in Washington, does he mean it? And what do Democrats think of that? Does he really have the knife out for government that does not work as he pushes for government that does?
Well, I think there's no question that Barack Obama does mean it. Getting from what he means to the end product is, of course, not going to be easy. It's remarkable that this is such an uplifting guy, that his story is so winning and inspiring. And yet the moment requires him to be the guy who says we have to deal with crisis and with unpleasant choices. He said we had refused to face unpleasant choices, and it falls to this genial man to call us to that task. That's going to mean calling all people in Washington, and indeed all around the country, a lot of Democrats on the Hill who think in old ways. You know, as I think somebody said, this speech is analogous to the one that Lincoln gave about needing to think in our new cases new, so we must think anew. That's what Obama is saying, including to his own party, because a lot of Democrats are as much a product of old think as anybody else around here. And Obama's going to be trying to cut deals with them and push them in directions he wants to go for the greater good of the country. This is about sacrifice in the sense that we all have to pull together. It's a different message in certain respects from ones we've heard in the past. George Bush hit this note really only after 9/11 and only in a cursory way. He really never asked us to face the hard choices, to face the sacrifice. Now he's gone. Now Obama's skills are going to be called on to try to make it happen. It's going to be fascinating to watch. He starts with a tremendous fund of goodwill, and I don't think any American starting out on this day can do anything other but wish him the best luck on what's going to be a difficult task.
Howard Fineman, senior Washington correspondent and columnist at Newsweek. Howard, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thanks.
It's great to have you there on the National Mall. Edna Greene Medford, you were on that same mall today listening. Jack Beatty compares his speech in a way to Lincoln's almost a battle cry. We must think anew, a sternness from this genial man. Was it the right message to your ear, Edna?
Absolutely. You know, it was a tough speech, but it was one also that was filled with hope and promise and commitment. It was more than what he said, I think, was what I saw him do for that audience, and it's what I've seen him do throughout the campaign. He inspires people. I was reminded by my niece and my grandniece, who were both there today, that they had spent 600 hours campaigning for him. My grandniece, Nadia, is just under 13 years old, and she did her homework, but then came and to her mother and said, I want to go and do this work, you know, in the evening.
Yes.
Not doing the kinds of things that you would expect a 12-year-old to be doing. I mean, she did those things as well, but she took the time to become involved in that campaign. And that's the kind of ability he has to inspire people. I was struck by how diverse the audience was, not just racially, but in terms of age. There were fairly young people there who were very excited to be there. There were many older people there as well. I met a young man who was from Spain, who had lived in the United States for a time, had gone back home, and had come back to be a part of this whole excitement today.
That
extraordinary.
All over the place. We're at 1-800-423-8255, and a lot of people waiting to join. Susan in West Roxbury, Massachusetts. Susan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show. What an exciting day. I'm a public school teacher, and I sat in an auditorium of third to eighth graders usually they're squeaking in their seats, they're turning around and talking to their neighbors. Tom, you could have heard a pin drop. These children understood the gravity of this day, and for me, I was just moved to tears. I can remember being a seventh grader and watching Jimmy Carter being inaugurated. And I think we conveyed to these children what an historic moment this was, and that they understood we are living in the toughest time since Franklin D. Roosevelt, since my, you know, my parents lived through the Depression. And these kids know that tough times are ahead, and they're ready to take up the mantle. And they were so excited. We had a few teachers who made the trek, and one of the little fourth graders said, "Look, there's Mrs. Henry," you know, in this crowd.
In the crowd of 2 million.
It was so sweet. And I had kids say to me, "My parents bought their first American flag." This is just so poignant.
It's a great day right out there to hear them fired up, as he has said in the campaign, and ready to go. Susan, thank you for that report. Let's get one here from Nick in Brookline, Massachusetts. Nick, you're on the air. What did you think, sir?
Oh, it's a wonderful day, beautiful day, and I was listening to Shields and Brooks, and they said the speech was not as good as others, and I thought it was one of the best speeches I had ever heard. I mean, I had my entire office stopped, and consists of pretty hardcore Republicans and pretty hardcore Democrats. Thank God we're a religious institution, so we all get along. You know? But everybody was really blown away by the speech. And the one feeling that I got from the speech that was the most kind of profound and overwhelming was, okay, what can I do? How can I serve you while you're serving us? What is it exactly that you want me to do? Spell it out and I'll do it. And I had the feeling of everyone in that office, Democrat or Republican, they're all were thinking the same way. Exactly what is it going to take? What do you want us to do? And I really do hope that you guys, with your influence and the right people, can talk to him and let us know exactly what you want. There's a lot of people out there that are willing to make the sacrifice.
Nick, we hear it loud and clear, the White House website changing even as the speech went on today. I have no doubt that those sort of requests for here's what you can do will be coming down in a hurry. I want to listen to Obama here talking about the economy today and saying the economy, never mind individual citizens, but the economy must work for everyone.
Nor is the question before us whether the market is a force for good or ill. Its power to generate wealth and expand freedom is unmatched. But this crisis has reminded us that without a watchful eye, the market can spin out of control. The nation cannot prosper long when it favors only the prosperous. The success of our economy has always depended not just on the size of our gross domestic product, but on the reach of our prosperity.
Barack Obama today, Jack Beatty, here he is saying yes to the markets, as he said yes to government, but where it's effective and when it spins out of control, no.
Yes, and he's talking about structural problems here, not cyclical problems. The cyclical problem is the recession, possibly even the depression. He's dealing with that. Here he's talking about structure. He's talking about the fact that every educational group in the country, including high school grads to PhDs, earned less in 2007 than they did in 2000, if you adjust it for inflation, with the exception of those people with professional degrees like doctors and lawyers. In short, the American prosperity machine was working only for the very, very few, and that was during a recovery. And he's pointing there, we've got to have, our prosperity has to have a bigger reach than simply people with graduate professional degrees like doctors and lawyers. It's got to reach everybody. And some of the most controversial decisions he's going to have to make is how far and how soon to push a bill that would make it easier for Americans to organize unions, because nothing he could do would help Americans raise wages faster than that.
Edna Green Medford, what about that? Yes to government, where it works. Yes to the market, where it works. Do you think that's going to sound reasonable? Do you think that's going to sound a bridge too far to people, or overdue?
You know, I think people will get behind him no matter what he asks of us, as long as he does it fairly. I mean, I loved his point today where he talked about all people are free. all people are equal and all people should have opportunity. And so it's that kind of thing that will pull us together to work toward that goal. And so if there are some programs that don't work, that are governmental programs, and he decides that those have to go, we do know that they will be replaced by things that do work. I mean, he's trying to make our government accountable to us, and I think we'll all get behind that.
We're at 1-800-423-8255, and we are on live this evening looking at the inauguration day of now President Barack Obama. Jack, you mentioned his comment saying we won't sacrifice, we won't make a false choice between safety and ideals on national security. Let's listen to a bit of that portion of the speech.
As for our common defense, we reject as false the choice between our safety and our ideals. Our founding fathers, faced with perils that we can scarcely imagine, drafted a charter to assure the rule of law and the rights of man, a charter expanded by the blood of generations. Those ideals still light the world, and we will not give them up for expedience's sake.
We reject as false the choice between our safety and our ideals, Jack Edna. But then he went on to say that the country would be firm with enemies abroad.
We will not apologize for our way of life, nor will we waver in its defense. And for those who seek to advance their aims by inducing terror and slaughtering innocents, we say to you now that our spirit is stronger and cannot be broken. You cannot outlast us, and we will defeat you.
Barack Obama today, you cannot outlast us and we will defeat you. No fear here about bringing up that kind of bellicose rhetoric, Jack, when the steel is there.
There's the steel right there. I don't know that I've ever heard him say something as hard, as tough as that, with that kind of spirit and steel. Yeah, I mean, we are going to get you. It's as clear as that. And it's interesting that even in recent years, George Bush hasn't been talking that way about our enemies, that is to say about al-Qaeda. So it's a tougher tone even than Bush.
Let's get a GOP view here, a conservative view. Fred Barnes joins us. He's executive editor at the Weekly Standard, been in Washington watching all day today. Fred Barnes, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
You're welcome.
What did you make of Obama's speech today, Fred?
Well, I thought it was a big day, not a big speech. The speech was just overshadowed by the event. And there were just so many amazing things that happened. You know, Obama and his wife at the White House, and then the swearing in, and then the march down Pennsylvania Avenue. I mean, gee, it was just an amazing day. I've lived in Washington my whole life. I've never seen this many people there, maybe half as many. But, 2 million people? Gee. And the excitement was incredible. The speech, I personally have heard Obama give 5 or 6 better speeches than the one today, but it didn't matter.
Fred Barnes, you've been skeptical about Barack Obama at many points. You've been a strong defender of George W. Bush. Barack Obama thanked him very prominently today, but then a lot of the rest of the speech could be read as a kind of a pretty severe excoriation of the Bush years. What did you think of that?
I don't see how you could read it as a severe excoriation. I think you could say he took a couple swipes at him. But other than that, I didn't find it that way.
He asked Americans to choose our better history, to reject this false choice between safety and ideals. It said our military power does not entitle us to do as we please. You didn't hear those?
I know, but he's saying things that are just givens that Bush would agree with. I mean, those are, look, if he wants to criticize Bush, he knows how to do it. He's done it before. So that, I didn't think that. Look, if it bothered Bush, he didn't show it. And besides, look, Obama's been the guy. He's talking about change. Everything's going to be different from the Bush administration. Can he just forget about that in his speech? The truth is he had more things for conservatives than I would have thought. You all were just talking about what he said about the war on terrorism, what he said about the economy and entrepreneurs and the risk takers and so on. I mean, some of that stuff, I think, went over pretty well.
Fred Barnes, with you, and we hear it loud and clear. It's great to have you with us this evening. Fred, thank you very much for joining us. Enjoy your evening there.
Okay.
Fred Barnes, executive editor at the Weekly Standard. We're talking about Obama's Inauguration Day. You can join us. What do you think? Will this country rise to his call for responsibility? What does that mean to you? 800-423-8255. We're live. Here's John Williams' Air and Simple Gifts, performed with such passion today on the West Portico of the Capitol. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point with a live wrap-up of President Barack Obama's Inauguration Day, a day that will no doubt live in American memory, in American history. We'll get a report in just a moment from the balls that are now cranking up in Washington, D.C. I'm joined tonight by On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, with me here in the studio, and Edna Greene, co-author of the Emancipation Proclamation, professor of history at Howard University. She was on the National Mall today in Washington for all the events there. Edna Greene, Medford. You can join us as well. What did you think of the speech? What did you make of the visuals? The new president, his family, Aretha, the crowd. And what did this country show the world today? What did we reveal about ourselves? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Let's go to California, Ventura, California, and Chuck. Chuck, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
We're well. What did you think, Chuck?
Well, here's the thing. You know, we have a lot of old guys, a lot of older generations in office. And, you know, obviously, I mean, a lot of them done a great job, but I just don't think they've done good enough. It's time for not only change, but reform, and the younger generations to come in and make that change. And I think Barack Obama represents that. And we saw the following of the younger generations on his every move. And the way that he spoke today, it just reinforced that he wants to change. It's coming from his experience with the communities. It's coming from his heart, and everybody felt it. And when was the last time that we felt that from a president? I mean, really.
Well, there was certainly unmistakable vigor in his youth. I'm right with you there, Chuck, 47 years old, and you could feel it just... Here he was coming out of the gate, charging out of the gate, charging into that oath, you know, practically stumbling around with John, right. Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts. But the vigor, unmistakable. Thanks for your call, Chuck. Jack.
But without any Kennedy-esque, quote, the torch has been passed to a new generation. Nothing that explicit at all. That's what Kennedy said.
Just be the
just,
generation.
That's it.
Let's hear from it. Beth in Concord, Massachusetts. Beth, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Very well.
Hi. So I'm a high school senior currently, and I saw the inauguration today with the rest of my school, and it was really amazing to watch everyone around me, especially my peers, just completely captivated by what Barack had to say, and really just being inspired by this. And it's especially important because, I mean, we are the next generation. We are now, and we need to be inspired by our politics, and we need to be invested in what's going on in our government. And having him as a figure for us to follow and for us to be led by is just really wonderful.
Beth, as a high school senior, let me ask you, first of all, does his race matter to you? And secondly, what did you most take away as the most important message of his speech today?
I think, for me, race is important in that it's monumentous. But, in fact, Barack is not defined by his race. Barack is defined by his intelligence and his integrity and who he is as a figure. Especially as a role model for everybody watching today.
Beth, we love it. A lot of people celebrating in Washington right now. Thank you for your call this evening. We want to hear about those celebrations. We're joined from Washington by Ann Schroeder Mullins. She's a columnist for The Politico. She's out and about covering the inauguration balls. Ann, thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So what are you seeing? What's cranking up in the Capitol this evening?
Well, I am on my way to the Google Inaugural Ball. I know it sounds strange. That
there's Google everything these days, I guess. Yeah?
Yes, everything is Google. But, you know, so Obama is going to have his 10 official balls tonight. And for my purposes, which is writing the shenanigans column for Politico, the official balls don't really do much for me because The performers are there, but I can't speak to them. So I'm going to Google to try to talk to some celebrities, and perhaps the Creative Coalition has a big ball tonight as well, which I'll stop by. And it has over 50 celebrities and allegedly over 100 politicians all going to this ball. And the Creative Coalition ball, for a couple, for two people to have tickets, it was $10,000. And for a single, it was $5,000.
Okay.
So you can imagine how fun that ball is.
What about just moving around Washington this evening, Anne? Has the crush of the crowd passed on through? Is it still in the streets?
Oh, it's still in the streets. The metro is filled to the brim. I was on the metro at 6 o'clock this morning, and it was definitely very full. And the same thing around noon, and the same thing around 5 and 6. I was talking to a few reporters who had to get out of a stop far, far away and walk in the frigid cold to get to the convention center where all the Obama balls are. And as a fact, the Obama parade was running late, and so now everyone is worried that the Obamas won't be able to show up to their own balls till 11 or midnight tonight, which, of course, would be upsetting to a lot of people, but maybe they'll just imbibe a little more.
Yeah,
the reporters, just the people.
They were back at the White House changing, getting ready. Beyonce, we hear, will sing At Last for Them, the Etta James song, when they finally dance together. That ought to be a tearjerker.
Yes, at the neighborhood ball. And it's also, you know, the number one wedding song of all time. But, yes, also I just found out, exclusively for you, Sting will perform at the neighborhood ball as well. He performed at an Ariana party last night that I attended along with Will.i.am, and it was excellent, and everyone was dancing in the party, and there was a countdown, and then all of a sudden confetti came up at midnight. It was sort of like a New Year's Eve party, only for Obama.
Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. Sting at the Neighborhood Ball from Ann Schroeder Mullins with the Shenanigans column at Politico.com. Ann, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
It's great to have you. Let's get a call from Ed in Newton, Massachusetts. Ed, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
You know, I heard that speech today, and what really impressed me was how serious this man is. And, you know, a prior caller, I believe, said, well, he had heard better speeches from Obama. I felt that this speech was a serious speech for a serious time, and it was without the soaring rhetoric. You know, we take the torch to pass the torch to a younger generation. The fact that this is a measured man, a disciplined man, a tough man, and he's going to be a terrific leader. And I was just really impressed. I thought that this was a speech filled with content, and I was just delighted in the comparison to the prior administration, his use of language. I just thought it was just fabulous.
Ed, we've got it. We appreciate your call. Let's get one from New Hampshire, Derry, New Hampshire, and Catherine. Catherine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Yeah. What did you think?
Well, I got to say, so I'm a Gen Xer.
Okay.
And it's been a long time coming to have a president or really any elected official that made me and my compatriots feel like we were not just charged with public service, but genuinely invited and included in a way that I don't think my generation has been before. You know, we've been sort of second best to the baby boomers and that sort of thing. And so it's really exciting to feel like I could participate in a public life.
When President Obama says it's time for a responsibility, my dear Gen Xer Catherine, that resonates with you.
It does. It makes me feel like not only do I have a responsibility, but a real privilege, I guess, to become a part of this country in a way that I don't think our generation has been invited to do before.
Catherine, that's terrific. Thank you very much for your call. Edna Green, Medford, what about the call for national responsibility? That's different than shopping. That's different from just from fun. I mean, that's hard work. Do you feel the country ready for that? In fact, in the reality of that, whatever it may mean, Edna.
There's no question that the country's ready. The country simply needs good leadership. And I think when you have the right leader in place, the people are willing to follow as long as it's fair. Now, no one wants to be the only one sacrificing when the rest of your community is going on with business as usual. But we will all come together under the right leader. And I think he could ask almost anything of the American people right now and really get the response from them as long as he is above board about what he's trying to do and as long as he's doing it fairly. So we're ready.
Jack, do you feel that? Do you feel the country ready? He's, in a way, asking for us to bring out a different aspect of ourselves, saying we've been in a long chapter, critical of the leadership during that time, critical of the American people during that time, saying it's time to be something else we can be, have been.
Yes, and I hope he can explain what he means by responsibility. Does he mean accountability, you be answerable? Does he mean we serve the public weal? Does he mean we think of others before we necessarily put ourselves first? What's the compass of that word? And I think that he really needs to find a way and give some serious thinking to how to involve people, how to speak to Beth, how to speak to Catherine, how to speak to people who want to be involved, who don't work for government. There's got to be some way to mobilize them to take advantage of their energy and idealism. George Bush had a chance at this right after 9/11. He didn't do it. He didn't want to do it. Karl Rove is quoted in the current Vanity Fair as saying to somebody at the time, no, we want to use this in the election against the Democrats. We can't call for any kind of unity and all the rest. And that's what they decided to do. This is one of those moments. And I hope that the Obama administration can find a way to pull these people in to somehow harness this idealism.
Barack Obama opening his speech today with a call to my fellow citizens. And then late in the speech, a call again talking about challenges and responsibility.
Our challenges may be new. The instruments with which we meet them may be new. But those values upon which our success depends, honesty and hard work, courage and fair play, tolerance and curiosity, loyalty and patriotism, these things are old. These things are true. They have been the quiet force of progress throughout our history. What is demanded then is a return to these truths. What is required of us now is a new era of responsibility, a recognition on the part of every American that we have duties to ourselves, our nation, and the world, duties that we do not grudgingly accept, but rather seize gladly. Firm in the knowledge that there is nothing so satisfying to the spirit, so defining of our character, than giving our all to a difficult task. This is the price and the promise of citizenship.
These things are old, but these things are true, Jack Beatty. He's calling on old, deep American values there.
Yes, and he's returning here to Franklin Roosevelt's 1933 inaugural when he said, what is demanded then is a return to these truths. FDR says we must return to the truths of the former, you know, the temple is now fallen. We have to go back to the faith of the fathers. And I think that this is throughout his autobiography and his other book, too, the emphasis on values. If you keep talking about those things, work, honesty, courage, fair play, tolerance, so on, those are things that people of all parties, red states, blue states, have in common. They unite us. And I think his genius as a politician, and I hope as a president, is to govern from those values and to say to people who perhaps don't even agree with them on the issue, you agree with me on the value, let's figure out a way to fulfill it.
I don't want to go out today without hearing something from Rick Warren. Controversial as the choice to give the invocation, pastor at the Evangelical Saddleback Church in Lake Forest, California, here he is opening his inaugural invocation.
Almighty God, our Father, everything we see and everything we can't see exists because of you alone. It all comes from you. It all belongs to you. It all exists for your glory.
Rick Warren supported Proposition 8, taking away gay marriage in California, but he did have a passage where he seemed to reach out to all Americans in his prayer today.
Help us, O God, to remember that we are Americans, united not by race or religion or blood, but to our commitment to freedom and justice for all.
Rick Warren, with that nod to freedom and justice for all, not united by race or religion or blood. Zini's calling from Watertown, Massachusetts. Zini, you're on the air.
Hello.
What did you think, Zini?
Hi, is this Tom?
Yes, sir.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm well.
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
I want to tell you a very quick story. My mom is 80 years old, and she just got her citizenship this past August. When we get out of the ceremony, her first question was, can I vote now? I said, yes, mom, why are you asking? I want to vote for that handsome black man. I said, mom, I am going to vote for him too. So we did vote for him. I am proud of my mom and myself. And I want to say one small thing. I believe the third best president is on the run now in the United States, Abraham Lincoln, Kennedy, and he himself.
Barack Obama, and you and your mom helped put him there, Zini. We appreciate your call, and I'm sorry, but I want to get one more clip in here. The benediction today. Zini, thanks for your call. From civil rights leader and co-founder of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, Reverend Joseph E. Lowry, with the benediction at today's inauguration ceremony for President Barack Obama.
Lord, in the memory of all the saints who from their labors rest, and in the joy of a new beginning, we ask you to help us work for that day when black will not be asked to get back, when brown can stick around, when yellow will be mellow, when the red man can get ahead, man, and when white will embrace what is right. Let all those who do justice and love mercy say amen. Amen. Say amen, amen. And amen. Amen.
Edna Greene Medford, a little good humor and echo of the 1960s and the civil rights movement right there in Reverend Lowry. And good Lord, it deserved to be there today, Edna.
Absolutely, indeed. You know, it was about inclusiveness, and certainly that's what President Obama is about as well. The African Americans in that audience certainly did identify with what Reverend Lowry was saying about how race has been a factor in this country. And what he's saying is all Americans should have the right and the opportunity to do and be whatever they wish.
It sounded like a lot of identification with that thought right there on that great plane, that great mall today, and you were right in the middle of it. Edna Greene Medford, it's been great to make your acquaintance in these last weeks, and we thank you so much for being with us this evening. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Jack Beatty, last thoughts.
Oh, well, it's a day to live in all our memories. And I'm thinking of those third graders. You know, in 80 years, they'll be talking about this. And think of all the changes they will have seen, all the women presidents, all the Japanese-American presidents. We're going to have them all.
And so for President Barack Obama, we go out tonight with music from just moments ago at the Neighborhood Ball. Here's a DJ playing Salt-N-Pepa's Push It. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Happy Inauguration Day.